Hi, and welcome back to episode number 309. Today we have session two of the Outsourcing Summit 2020. We are putting the audio through the podcast, and I've listened through all of the sessions, and actually they work out really well as an audio track also. Today, this is session two. We have a panel of three that I interviewed during the Outsourcing Summit on the 8th of October. The topic for this panel discussion is the technology, tools, and infrastructure that enable global workforces. We were joined by Alvin Dan Velasco of Payoneer, Morgan McGilvray of Santos Knight Frank, and attorney March Duran-Schultz of Filepino. And of course, I was also on the panel, hoping or trying at least to keep everything together. So, you know, as mentioned, this is one of the six sessions of the Outsourcing Summit, and it works pretty well on audio. If you want to catch the video version of this, if you want to see the slides that are mentioned within this, you can check out the Outsourcing Summit replay, which is also on our website. So to check that out, go to outsourceaccelerator.com. As mentioned, this is session two, and join us next week for session three, which is a guided tour of CloudStaff. And again, surprisingly, this actually works out pretty well in audio. So make sure you join us again next week for that. As always, if you want any of the show notes, if you want any more information about this, or if you want to check out the videos, go to the podcast page, which is at outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. And as always, if you want to ask us anything, then just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. Enjoy. Hi, and welcome back. This is the second session now of the Outsourcing Summit 2020. Thank you for joining us. And we have now another panel of experts here in the studio to discuss technology and the environment. So this session now is all about how we facilitate easy offshore staffing. Okay, we're separated by many thousands of miles physically, but actually now the world is getting much, much smaller because of all the technology and the interfaces that enable this. So the Philippine outsourcing industry is now sort of 25, 30 years old. It is very mature, it's sophisticated, and so there's so much infrastructure in place to make offshore staffing easy, whether you are a solopreneur or you're a large enterprise. It is getting easier than ever. So just before we get into that, I want to remind people about the Outsourcing Summit today. This is now session number two. Welcome. We have six sessions in total. The next three sessions after this are actual live BPO tours. We're touring around offshore staffing facilities. Okay, and these are, we're going to see how we go walking around these facilities. We're going to interview the CEOs. We're going to talk to staff and management there. And we're really going to give you a behind the scenes look of the Philippine offshore staffing industry. We're talking to some of the world leaders in this industry. So it's super exciting, and hopefully it all goes well. It is now late at night for us. Of course, in the US, you're heading into your day. And it's just worth reminding everyone that the Philippines is basically, well, the Philippine offshore staffing industry has been born out of largely servicing the American market. So a huge proportion of the sector and society here work through the night, serving American clients and, of course, clients across the globe. So it really is incredibly internationalized. So do send in your questions, and we can put those to the panel. We've got people, of course, there ready to chat if you have any questions. And of course, there are the offers for the day down the bottom, and there is the sessions guide up there if you want to check out any of the other times, and please put them into your calendar. Okay, so we'll get on with this panel for today. It is about the technology and environment that is supporting the offshore staffing industry. So I have a couple of slides here. One thing when we have clients start or inquire with offshore staffing, they're faced with a plethora of options. You know, there's the big sort of enterprise solutions, and then there is freelancers, there's all the platforms like Upwork, Freelancer, and everything in the middle. You know, is this full-time staffing? Is it a part-time VA? And this is a complex question as in terms of where people should position themselves and what sort of staffing they should look for. I have a chart which is a little bit scary and a little bit complex when you look at it, so I won't go into it too much. But effectively, the distribution curve, what you see in the C curve, is a typical bell curve distribution of, let's say, the United States. What you have with the B curve is more of the distribution, the bell curve, applying to the Philippines. And again, I don't want to go too deep into this because, you know, charts can look super boring, but what is critical to know is there's a very wide distribution in the Philippines in terms of skill sets, in terms of qualifications, in terms of competencies. Because it is a developing nation, it is often much wiser to and safer to go towards the upper end of the bell curve distribution. Okay, and this pertains to not only the individual, to the candidates, but also the outsourcing facilities and all of the services around that. Okay, if you go out of the main centers, then you will encounter more friction. You might have trouble with internet connectivity. You know, there might be certain sort of technical aspects that are more difficult. So the takeaway is, don't try and do this too cheap. If you come offshore staffing, it is much better to go with the broad upper part of the market because it prevents a lot of disappointment. The next chart that I want to bring you to is, you know, and we'll finish with charts after that, is basically a crosshair of when you are assessing the pros and cons of offshoring decisions. You are balancing the cost of the item versus the friction of doing it, okay? And in your hometown, to employ someone, for example, there is relatively zero friction, but there is relatively high cost. If you take options where you reduce the cost almost down to zero, you will encounter increasing amounts of friction. And by friction, I mean just hassle factor, disturbance, annoyances, and things like that. And it is real, and that is why a lot of people attempt outsourcing and then walk away disappointed. So this is just a little sort of insight into, it's about finding that balance of the cost and friction kind of equilibrium. And it's different for everyone, but again, it's this temptation to find cheaper, and it really isn't the solution. Okay, so I want to now introduce our experts, and I'm obviously grateful that they have joined us. This is crazy times that we're in. We're all wearing masks, we're all sort of, everything's a little bit crazy, and of course we're now battling with what is the new normal. And as you are too, across the world, and we're all trying to come to terms with the doing business in the new normal. And so hopefully through wearing masks, we can actually share some of those insights with you today. The first guest on the panel is Morgan McGilvray of Santos Knight Frank. He is, as he will introduce, deeply involved in the property market here in the Philippines. And I brought him onto the panel to really just give insight into the facilities that are available that really facilitate offshore staffing to such a degree now that things are effectively turnkey. So thank you so much for joining us, Morgan. I suppose initially, do you want to just introduce yourself and a little bit about Santos Knight Frank?
Yeah, sure, Derek. Thank you for having me. So I'm actually from California originally, and I got my first taste of the outsourcing market. I worked for a firm straight out of college, and they were in California, and they were actually outsourcing to a call center here in Makati, here in the Philippines. So I got to work with some of the Philippine agents, really loved it, was surprised at everything. And about 7 years later, I found myself in Asia without a job and decided I should go to the Philippines and get involved in this outsourcing market there, because it is just an uncovered gem of an industry that no one talks about. Everyone talks about India. They should be talking about the Philippines. I'm going to get there while it's still quite good. So I came into the country in 2009, spent a year here, found my job. I now lease office space to the outsourcing industry along with domestic firms. And I work for a company called Santos Knight Frank. We are a part of Knight Frank, which is the largest private real estate property firm in the world. And we are partners with Newmark in the US, which hopefully a lot of the audience would be familiar with.
Thank you. And what have you seen? You've been here for a number of years now. What have you seen in terms of the development of the office market over, you know, the last 10 to 15 years?
Yeah, it's changed a lot. The way they build office buildings nowadays is catering to the BPO market, the business process, offshoring or outsourcing, depending. And what I mean by that is when the industry first started in the early 2000s, the buildings they were going into were more typically designed for traditional companies, meaning the operations were during the day, very low frequency of desks and whatnot. But those are the only buildings available. And so the call centers all went into those buildings. And that was even true through probably that first decade in the 2000s. And then what started to happen is there was kind of a rush to the outsourcing industry after the global financial crisis, is that the developers got smart and they realized, okay, in order to cater to the offshoring industry, we have to change the way we put up buildings. So rather than tall and skinny, we've got to do boxy, right? Short, squatty, and boxy. Why? Because you can get a lot more people into the space. It's more efficient. They figured out that you've got to have an aircon system that can go 24/7 nowadays. The call centers need it. It saves a lot of money to have a proper system. Those old systems designed for daytime only, they won't cut it anymore. Making sure that, you know, the building has really got generous fire escapes and all these different things, which the industry has learned through trial and error, is exactly what the call centers need. And so now pretty much every building going up has something in mind. Are we going to be an outsourcing building, or are we going to be a traditional corporate building? And then you'll have all the bells and whistles necessary for those.
Thank you, Morgan. Now, introducing attorney Marge Duran Schultz. Thank you for joining us. And I have invited attorney Marge here to give people an insight into the infrastructure in terms of the commercial environment in which people do business here. When you offshore, you have a lot of options. You know, you can employ people freelance. Typically people go the route of outsourcing suppliers. And then of course you can incorporate your own business and do it yourself. There's a whole spectrum of opportunities when you come offshore, and you know, you can pick and select and choose whatever strategy is right for you at the time you are doing it, and dependent on how big your team is and requirements are at the time. So thank you so much for joining us, Attorney March. I suppose initially, do you want to just introduce yourself and what File Pino does?
Right. I'm a lawyer and I'm also married to an expat. My husband is a serial entrepreneur. He's a doctor and has established his own outsourcing company, a medical outsourcing company, back in 2008 in the Philippines. When we established a company, his friends and then friends of friends have been asking me, like, what is the business environment in the Philippines? As a lawyer, what are your thoughts? As a lawyer, what do you think are the, what is the ease of doing business in the country? And then by then, I realized that the business outsourcing environment in the Philippines is booming. So we established File Pino just to assist a lot of expats who are unable to come to the Philippines and still are able to establish their business in the Philippines. We understand that a lot of expats would just be able to come here once or twice, or not even in the Philippines, but they still want to do the outsourcing here, and how are they going to do that? So they would need a lawyer that would assist them in helping them and doing all the proper structure, being given the proper recommendation on how their business should be established. As you said, there's a milieu of choices, and really depends on the friction, as you've mentioned, what they want to do and how they want to continue doing business after they've established the business in the Philippines.
And I suppose there's a common association with developing nations that the legal and commercial environment can be hostile towards foreigners or just businesses generally, or just generally opaque or scary. What is the ease of doing business in the Philippines, and what is the business environment actually like?
Right, two things. Number one, it's always been a misnomer that it's difficult for foreigners to establish business in the Philippines because of the capitalization, because you have to be partners with Filipinos in establishing the Philippines. That's not entirely true. You're only limited to having a 60% business partnership in the Philippines, only if you are taking most of your revenues from the Philippines. But if you're doing outsourcing, you're getting most of your revenue from outside of the Philippines, you're not taking money from the Philippines. You can absolutely get 100% of your business established, owned by you or your business partners. Number two, and ease of doing business. When we started the company in 2011, I would say it was a little bit difficult because a lot of things are manual. Because of the COVID and after a few years after 2011, the government has slowly but improved the infrastructure on how to establish this business in the Philippines. Before, I have a lot of licensed officers to ask them to line up and file the paperwork. Now you can do it online. Not everything. A lot of things has to be still signed by wet signature and notarized, but at least you can scan it and then send it via email or use the platform of the government so that they could check it. And you don't have to send at all the time your license so that you can get a progress report on whatever you want to do.
Great. And so, Alvin, you are with Payoneer, and I invited you to be a part of the summit because critically, the world is moving towards one globalized marketplace. The lifeblood, if you like, of a marketplace is the finance, how you move the money around. And, I'm really a big believer in that. I think globalized trade sort of started first, and now globalized workforces are actually following along. That's right. Behind. I suppose, just initially, are you able to introduce yourself and just describe how Payoneer clicks into that ecosystem?
Sure. First of all, thank you for having me, Derek. So I head up business development for Southeast Asia in Payoneer, and we empower businesses of all sizes with a full suite of payment and collection solutions. So you're able to pretty much transact across all regions a lot more securely, a lot more low cost and high speed. And so to understand where we are now in terms of the global payments, right, you have to, I think it's best to understand first how international business to business transactions are made. So from a small business, typically a small medium business owner would go to their local bank or community bank, and that bank will then correspond with the larger bank that's able to move funds outside of the country. And inversely, on the receiver's end, you have the same process: corresponding bank, local bank, and then receiver. And so with that, it's four hops and four levels of costs. And with that, you incur a number of issues, actually. First off is the timeline, the delays of payments. You have usually wires or bank transfers are 3 to 5 days. Some even take longer. A McKinsey report, I think, mentioned 60% of business-to-business offshore payments require manual intervention. And so in worst-case scenarios, payments actually don't make it through. And that could be lifeblood for a business cash flow, right? Secondly is the transparency. They're working with multiple countries, you have conversion fees that kick into place, and exchange rates can be a little bit of a mystery. You typically don't get a visibility on the fees until the transactions are complete, so you're not really able to shop around for the best rates and options out there. And it gets even more interesting if you have multiple clients in multiple countries, 3 or 4 or 5 more countries, right? If I was a small, medium, let's say a digital agency and I had an Australian, European and Canadian clients, all of them have their own preferences for paying or getting paid, right? Some prefer get paid by credit card, some prefer e-check, some prefer local banks. And, you know, it's not really feasible for me to register my business in all these countries just so I can acquire a bank account to make it easier for my clients to pay me. And so now with the pandemic and digitalization being pushed 5-10 years ahead, Payoneer's innovative platform sort of levels the playing field in this digital economy where small, medium, and even enterprise businesses can take advantage of services that were previously just available to large enterprises, right? Mm. And so, yes. So,
I remember, you know, in my own business journeys, it was only in 2009 where I tried to integrate card payments into my website, and it was virtually impossible, and actually almost was impossible because I was a small and medium, I was a small business, but the bank wanted a £250,000 bond, you know,
deposit,
and
yeah.
And of course that is impossible because you don't have that kind of cash flow when you're a small business. And you know, it's easy for people to go, yeah, it's just payments, but actually it's the lifeblood of a business. And to be able to move money around the globe seamlessly, cheap, is invaluable. And I think it sort of facilitates what we now see, which is more e-commerce, more globalized trade, more globalized employment. And I just sort of see it sort of progressing along that line. You know, and with that is, it's all the sort of interface, it's the dashboard, isn't it? It's knowing where the money is, it's being able to distribute the money easily, and it's just really that ease and convenience of basically a full integration in with your business. This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener, and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote.
Absolutely, and with the way digital payments are evolving, you can pretty much have all these sort of solutions available to you as a startup, as a small business owner, with pretty much at low cost or even sometimes free, right? So a lot of small, medium businesses are taking advantage of this, and you can see that the biggest impact would be the cost savings, where they can reinvest that cost savings back into the business, grow into more markets, or even just, you know, re-incentivize their employees, right? And so you're absolutely right in the sense that, you know, if I was a small business owner, it doesn't make sense for me to afford these huge deposits, right? That could be lifeblood. And on the other side, if I was a BPO or an outsourcing company, and I get delays in payments, or funds get held up for salaries or for whatever reason, that could spell disaster for my employees, right? You have disgruntled employees and cash flows, and it just trickles down with different permutations and business problems. Mm-hmm.
And so we are in the new normal. We're all, you know, facing COVID. The Philippines is very much open for business. There's been very little downtime, you know, and productivity has been maintained, but life is different. Most of the offices now, and I think we'll see that later as we do tours tonight, are still empty. There's still a big work from home move, and you know, it's essential. But globally, there is everything now is people are sort of open to remote work. People are sort of questioning whether they actually need the office. You've got all of the sort of business leaders in Google and Facebook and Twitter all saying, you know, you guys don't have to come back to the office. And, you know, it's certainly the case now, but I wonder whether that will be the reality long term. Morgan, you obviously have a vested interest in the office building surviving. I am worried that over the long term, you know, people are sort of, it's a bit of a fad to go, hey, we're going to work from home. We don't need an office. We don't need sort of the community of our workplace. But it's untested. It's unproven. What are your thoughts in terms of the future of the workplace?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I get asked this a lot. You know, everyone got to try work at home without any choice for the last few months now. Are they figuring out that it really should be their plan in the long term, or should they bring people back into the office, or more likely it's going to be a mix of both, right? But one thing that we always like to say is, one, it's very early times to make long-term decisions on your balance between who works at home and who comes into the office. Why is that? Because even the folks that are working from home right now, this is a lockdown scenario for the most part. They don't have a lot of options to do anything but stay at home and work, all right? This is not the real world that we're simulating outside. This is a very unique case, and so that's a big part of it. Once the world opens up again, things are a little bit different. So that's one. Two, of course, you know, as around the world, we noticed that, you know, people were scared for their jobs. I mean, that's true in every other country, right? And so people really got home, got to work, kept their nose down, and kept working because, of course, everyone wants to keep their job. Everyone's a little bit scared, too. So you're really getting a lot of attention, I'm sure, from everyone who's working from home. Okay. But that does not necessarily mean that for the next 10 years, it's going to be that way, right? Mm-hmm. And so what we're helping our clients do is say, okay, we can focus on the work from home environment in a physical sense, right? Do they have the right technology, the right internet connection? Do they have a quiet room? Do they have a comfortable chair? But do we really know if this individual employee or his or her manager has the right mental competencies for working at home over the long term? And how are we going to know that without actually seeing it play out? Well, one thing we've been doing with our clients to help them figure that out is actually giving them something called the Harrison Assessment, Remote Workforce Analytics, which is just a 20-minute personality survey. And then from there, they take the results and they kind of come out with results like this, and I think that's showing up pretty well, which surveys the force and says, okay, if everyone on your workforce, employees and managers, were to work from home, well, we found about 70% tend to have the competencies necessary to be successful and work from home over the long term. But about 30% of a given workforce may not or does not have the right competencies for working at home over the long term. It's not an insult to them. It just means their competencies are based around work from the office. And so if you try and do work from home over the long term with, you know, a majority of your workforce or your entire workforce, what you're going to probably have is that up to 30% of your workforce will become disenfranchised. They'll become depressed, they'll become bored, they will start looking for new jobs, or their productivity will suffer. And it's not just kind of the rank and file, the managers too, they have to learn how to manage remotely. A lot of people don't have the competency for that either. So what we're telling companies is, yeah, consider work from home as a part of your real estate strategy, but you've got to run something like this early on and figure out who might struggle so that you can give them the additional support they need, because otherwise you're possibly losing really good employees and managers who just aren't well suited for work from home.
Attorney March, it is, you know, everyone now is at home. Before, people were not necessarily even allowed to work from home. Again, if people are concerned about the health and welfare of the Filipino workforce, it's very pro-labor in the Philippines. People are looked after very well here. And generally the system is there and strongly protects the interests of the labor force, which is absolutely fantastic. And again, you know, later today, we are going to look through outsourcing suppliers and show you the environment that is out there for the workforce. But March, where does it stand legally? You know, obviously a large portion of the market as well are maybe freelancers or work from home, or they're in this sort of gray market on the gig platforms. Where does it stand in terms of employment rights, and if people are able to engage people on a freelance basis?
Right. First off, we have to take a look at our corporation labor code in so far as being pro-labor, as you have mentioned. We have to emphasize, though, that being pro-labor really is not like in any instances you're always pro-labor in your decisions. It's mostly if there's a vague law, there's a little bit of a gray area that the employee has done as an infraction in the code of the company, maybe the company should be thinking twice in putting out disciplinary action. So it's not like outright, okay, you're pro-labor, but it's just a matter of putting down the proper policies so that you have your HR person will have the steps to follow and which one should be meted out a penalty and which one should be meted out some just coaching, you know, being given a pass. The second one that you've asked is what is the the labor on
So in terms of like the freelance market,
right. The freelance market, there are different types of being an employee. You can be a freelance, you can be a project employee, you can be a probationary employee, you can be a regular employee. So freelance, there is no employee-employer relationship. So you can fire at will. Although while you can fire at will, you know, humanitarian reasons, I would always suggest, you know, at least give 30-day notice. While it's not required, but at least, you know, you allow this person to at least find another work and you're not leaving that person in the air. And not having work while he's looking for work. The next one would be a project employee. This is usually applicable to those that are working in BPOs because sometimes the contracts of their employers are tied to a project that they're working on. So when you have a project employee, that means you can fire at the end of the termination of the contract of your employer with the client. So that's also allowed. It's easier to fire that way, and because the employee already knows, okay, my contract ends at this date, because that's the same contract where my employer's contract with his client ends. And then the probationary and the regular employees. The probationary employees, you have 6 months, maximum of 6 months, unless you can extend it for very viable or reasonable reasons. But during this 6 months period, you have to check the performance of the employee, if that person is really doing well, fit for the job, the behavior, is that person in line with the mission and vision of the company. So whenever you have an employee as a probationary, when you start that employee, you have to have a solid metrics so that when your employee starts, that person is explained, that person knows the expectations, so that what are the metrics that he has to fulfill so that he can be regularized. The regular employee, this status is really a little bit difficult for the employers, mainly because as a regular employee, that person has already surpassed the hump. You have already tried and tested that person, and that person has proved himself to be a viable employee for the company. With regular employees, there are pros and cons. You are keeping that person because that person is really good for you, but you have to follow the labor laws when you mete out disciplinary action.
So there's, like any country, there's due process, there's sort of structure around all of this. As a person exploring offshore staffing, you have the options of going into the system yourself, and then of course there's the offshore staffing industry, which effectively manages all of the employment relationship themselves, and then you plug into that as a client. So it's kind of, there's a whole sort of range of options now if you want to explore offshore staffing, and that is what the outsourcing industry has grown up to do, is effectively become that facilitator to ensure the welfare of the staff, the employees, and the ease of doing business for the client. So Alvin, you're going.
Actually, your example is perfect, mainly because a number of our clients that we establish are when so that they can make their feet get wet, they usually start with outsourcing companies. Mm. They have a small team, and then when they get bigger, that's the time that they establish their companies. But as you said initially during the this webinar, you said, you know, it's as a matter of friction. Do you want the headache to manage your employees? Do you want the headache in constantly checking or ensuring that their funds are being wired or being released to the employees? Do you want to constantly check their behavioral performance? So if you don't want those headaches, then you go to outsourcing companies that can help you, or that's been in the business for a very long time that can help you, you know.
And there is this common life cycle that you see with people offshoring. You know, they might start with the VA remote, and then, you know, as they build a team, they go into like real facilities with structure, with proper employment. And then if they build a big, big team and become established here, then an option, of course, is to incorporate.
Right.
And it's that kind of life cycle, isn't it, really? And Alvin, so obviously COVID has hit us all, but, you know, one aspect of society that has done okay from it is e-commerce, online, you know, commerce, basically. And it's kind of ballooned. Payoneer is sort of enormously connected to the entire e-commerce industry, isn't it? It's plugged into most of the platforms. And then on the other side of that, very close connections with the freelancer community and the workforce community. How have you seen, from a bird's eye view, the e-commerce environment and commerce generally since COVID?
Yeah, so I definitely agree. People are spending a lot of time at home, so therefore online shopping has spiked, e-commerce is booming, and along with it, the evolution of different financial solutions, right? And so if I was a solopreneur or a freelancer or online professional, I want to make sure that I am enabling my businesses with all these tools, all in one solution, so that I'm able to do business seamlessly with pretty much everyone across the globe, at really cost effectively, a lot, you know, securely, so I can focus on my business and not worry about my payments. And so, whether you're e-commerce, whether you're a freelancer, in Payoneer, I think you'll find there's pretty much solutions for all of your needs to get paid and pay out across borders.
We do recommend if people are beginning their journey, then, you know, it's just so easy to plug into Payoneer, because it's easy to plug in, and then Payoneer is already plugged into most of the ecosystems out there.
Right.
And it is a big part of the freelancer and community in the Philippines. So there's just this sort of natural acceptance of that as a safe, secure, easy way to pay and receive money. And have you seen a corresponding rise in terms of freelancer demand and work from home demand? Do you have the?
Yeah, definitely. I think with thousands, this was just in the news recently, I think thousands of hospitality and tourism professionals were getting retrained by the Department of Tourism for online jobs and digital jobs, right? So a lot of people that were traditional in conducting their business have now shifted online, probably took up an additional source of revenue in e-commerce or, you know, selling their services for freelance work. And so it's really a natural progression from this pandemic. And it's not gonna slow down. It's just gonna pick up a lot even faster. We're just lucky enough to be in a position that we're able to take advantage of the evolution of financial technology for all types of businesses and all walks of life.
Right. And back to you, Attorney March. The business environment is complex here, but you know, maybe we can speak to the general support for the outsourcing industry, both, you know, from all levels of government, from industry, and also the PESA and things like that. Can you sort of speak to the the sort of massive ecosystem that is out there that is basically built around supporting and helping along the outsourcing, offshoring, BPO industry.
Right. The most common incentive or the government assistance that being given to outsourcing firms would be the incentive in taxes, be allowing them while they're at the infancy stage for the first 4 years, they are given tax breaks. So we have the PEZA, Philippine Economic and Zone Authority, and the Board of Investments. For those that are IT related, they are given income tax holiday for their operations. So if you are already a business outside of the Philippines and you've just made a subsidiary here and you've established your company here and you are bound to pay taxes, but for the first 4 years, if you're registered with PEZA or your BOI, then you don't have to pay for the income tax, which is 30% of your net income. But after that, there is still incentive that you can avail of. Under PEZA, you have the 5% gross income tax. So it's really gross profit that is still nice because it's 5% versus the usual 30% when you are a regular company, that you don't have this government incentive being given to you. There are also pockets of economic zones. You have Cavite Economic Zones, Laguna, Mactan, Cebu. There are different areas where you, if you are particularly in manufacturing, you have free duties whenever you import raw materials. And it's easier also to get raw materials from outside of the country and then you manufacture it and then ship it out. So these are a little bit of the government agencies that allows the businesses to at least during the infancy stage being given assistance so that they don't have to worry about the taxes when they're doing business in the Philippines.
Morgan, forgetting COVID for a while, what was the trajectory of the office ecosystem? And, you know, I use office as a proxy basically for the growth of the industry. And can you speak to just generally the growth of the CBDs around Manila and, you know, that basically reflecting this enormous growth of the BPO industry?
Yeah, there was prior to the pandemic, and I think post-pandemic it will continue. We were seeing about 1 million square meters of new office development. So that's about 10 million square feet per annum. And I would say 70% of that was because of the BPO industry, the outsourcing industry, to the point where there are districts within Metro Manila where there is just no more land available to develop. And so what will happen is the buildings that were meant to go up that have a plot of land, they will continue to go up. But I think more importantly, we're now seeing the development of the provinces outside of Metro Manila and outside of Metro Cebu. Those are becoming increasingly popular with the outsourcing industry and even with the kind of the what we call the captive industry. So the big Fortune 500s who have satellite offices here in the Philippines. So places that come to mind, Clark, Iloilo, Bacolod. So these are kind of your Tolon's top 100 outsourcing destinations. And what we're seeing there is the infrastructure that the outsourcing companies need is kind of finally in those areas. They finally have the grade A buildings necessary. They finally have the power generation necessary. They've always had the employment there. That wasn't the problem. They just needed the right infrastructure there in order to bring the business there. That's now happening.
There's a lot of people out there that they're just like, hey, I just came to this event just wanting a VA, and you know, we're talking about leasing buildings. What can you say to the flexibility of workspace? Now, everyone knows WeWork, the WeWork story. People might not realize that WeWork is also in Manila. And as we are sort of democratizing offices and workplaces, it's just getting easier and easier to get a place for your team, is it?
Yeah, I mean, the spectrum of entry strategies is so long now. And what I mean by that is you could come in and you could do your own thing and lease your own office right away if you want to. And a fair amount of firms actually still do that. On the other end of that spectrum is to outsource everything to a third-party call center. So if you just want to, you know, pay per agent per month and have them hire and manage and everything, they can do that for you too. So those are the two ends of the spectrum. But I think what you're getting at, and you're quite correct, is that there's now a lot in the middle. So kind of hybrids between those two models. And what I mean by that is nowadays, if you want to kind of keep in-house the hiring, the managing, you know, to make sure to protect your brand and to protect the way you do things, that's fine. But you don't want to come into the Manila and sign a 5-year lease because you're not sure if it's going to work out. Now you can lease by the seat or by the room or by the floor, and you've got short-term commitments. You know, you want to make a 6-month commitment, you want to make a 1-year commitment, that's fine. 5 seats, 50 seats, 500 seats, that's fine. And perhaps underappreciated is you scale up and you scale down by the seat with very short notice to the provider, right? So it's not like you lease an office and then it's too small, oh no, what do you do next, right? With these ones, these providers have multiple offices all around Metro Manila. Hey, you need an extra 100 seats for next month? Okay, yeah, we've got that for you in this center, you know, maybe 2 floors up. You can lease it for 6 months. If you decide you have to scale back down again, just give us 60 days notice. We'll let you do that too. Mm-hmm. That's an amazing amount of flexibility, which is quite important to this market, because I think what was keeping some firms from coming in is just the fear of long-term commitment. They weren't sure if it was going to work out, and they didn't want to sign a 5-year lease and pay $1 million to build out a new office only to learn it wasn't going to happen. Right. So now you've got all these great providers who allow a tremendous amount of flexibility so that you can come in with very little commitment, and almost everyone stays. In fact, usually they grow faster than they anticipated. But you know, if you're a little risk averse and you want to just try it out, there's plenty of options for that now too.
And that is the key, and I suppose we can summarize on that point in that it's just, there's reduction of all friction points, isn't there? To 25 years ago, it was a real big task to run an international team and to have an offshore team. Now everything is turnkey, everything is in the cloud, you know, and everything is in a simplified dashboard. It really is, it's a world away. And it's accessible to people that just want even a part-time person or a you know, a full-timer. So thank you so much, Morgan of Santos Knight Frank, Attorney March of Filepino, and Alvin of Payoneer for joining us. And to the audience, this is session 2. I hope you enjoyed that. We have now session 3 coming up. I am racing off to the first outsourcing supplier. It is called CloudStaff. You can check out the time. I think that's starting in about 1.25 hours. And that's going to be really exciting. We are doing a tour around the first outsourcing facility, talking to Lloyd Ernst, the CEO and founder of CloudStaff, and talking to some of his staff there. So join us for that. That's in your schedule. And please also send in your questions and get in touch. Thank you. Okay, that was session 2 of the Outsourcing Summit. As always, if you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. And if you want to ask us anything, send us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.